And good morning. We are now at 8:33. Welcome back to Quicksland this morning, and this is our monthly visit with Congressman Blaine Luchtemeyer. Congressman, good morning, sir.
Good morning, Bob. Great to be with you again.
And first of all, I want to thank you for taking some time to give us a call on Saturday after the passing of President Bush last Friday. That was going above and beyond the call. And this is an emotional time for everyone, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it was. I was honored to be able to do that. I mean, he was, you know, he was a great American. We can all have political differences, but at the end of the day, he was a very, very nice and special man, a very compassionate man. And I think he did a pretty good job as president. And, his family is some interesting folks. I think they really are very civil individuals who lead by example. And, you haven't heard George Bush say one unkind word yet about Barack Obama, who succeeded him. And I think that tells you a lot about the Bush family. And I think they're nothing but class. And so it's difficult to, lose someone of that stature and who's been that important to us as a country. But we all pass at some point, and we hope and pray for their family and everything that, they get back to their world.
How do you not get choked up when you're seeing part of the funeral and you see his son, President Bush, getting choked up?
Well, I think that just shows the when you say family, I mean, that's the kind of people they were. They were truly people who had a priority of family. They enjoyed each other. They worked and supported each other. They truly understood what family meant. The close-knitness of the family, even though they have an sort of extended family that is all over the country, quite frankly. But whenever there's that tie of family, there's emotion there that is very special. And for all of us who have lost, and I'm sure everybody has that's listening this morning, lost a loved one, lost a family member. I mean, it's very difficult. There's a lot of love there that is tugging at your heart. And because the Bush family is in the spotlight, makes them no different than the other family.
All right. Again, if you have a question for Congressman Luchtemeyer, 263-2424, toll-free 800-892-2300. One final thought on the president, too, and we've heard this from Democrats and Republicans, how he was able to get a coalition of nations together at the start of the initial Gulf War is truly miraculous, isn't it?
Well, I think it goes back to the fact that he was ambassador of the United Nations, and he was an envoy to China and some other countries, and understood international relationships and knew a lot of the leaders of the world. And I think his ability, and he understood that in order to get something done, you had to form a coalition and get buy-in from other countries. And when you do that, that really ramps up the pressure on what you're trying to accomplish, and on the country or the whatever it is you're trying to get done. And so he understood that. And then the first thing he did was to go do that. And I think you saw the ineffectiveness of, President Obama and trying to get something done like that, because he didn't go out and reform those relationships. Bob, you and I have talked about this on the show a number of times. And then the first thing that Donald Trump does when he gets elected is he goes out and meets all these leaders and calls them up, and he goes to visit them. They come visit him. And now whenever he tries to do something, he's very effective at it, because he can get these people pull together, because they know who he is, and they've had a personal relationship with him. And President Bush understood that and was able to accomplish a lot because of his vast experience prior to being president, which, I've said in every interview I've done that he may have been the best prepared president from the standpoint of background that we've ever had. From all of the vast experiences he had in his life, both from the standpoint of education and understanding what goes on within our country, as well as relationships and how he understood the rest of the world. So I think, from that standpoint, he was a very, very, very well-prepared individual to be our president.
All right, you've talked an awful lot about that relationship building. How about for you in Congress? How important is it for you to develop relationships with other House members so when you need to get something done, you know who to call?
Yeah, it's very important. Even if you're in the majority, you still need to form relationships with the minority. And when you're in the minority, you have to form relationships with the majority to be able to get things done. You could sit there and throw rocks all day, and you can try and push through partisan bills, but when it gets time to be able to get them pushed across the finish line, you're not going to get it done. And we've found that out time after time. What I have always done is try and put together a bill if it's something that I think has a chance to get across the finish line, and go to a Democrat colleague and say, hey, let's sit down and talk about this. And you know, over the years, I've formed some pretty good relationships, and I'm not, a rock thrower, a bomb thrower. People know I'm very pragmatic, and when you sit down and talk to them, doesn't mean I give in to the minority party when I was in the majority here. But I think I understand that they have a place in this to be able to support. And I, you know, there's ways to refine the bills that you're working on to get their support. And we've done that. And I think, you know, Emmanuel Cleaver and I is a perfect example. Emmanuel is ideologically 180 degrees from where I am. But he's, the former mayor of Kansas City and now the congressman from Kansas City. And he was my ranking member when I was housing and insurance chair. And we worked on a housing bill, which is very controversial for a Republican to work on housing. That's a pretty difficult task. And so we sat down and worked on that. And I held, I don't know how many different roundtables and meetings and hearings. And he was a part of a lot of that. I intentionally included him in those things because I wanted his input and his support. And we got done putting the bill together. It passed the House unanimously, and it passed the Senate unanimously, which is the first rule bill, which is a bill that can go to the floor and be amended. The first rule bill in over 25 years that had gone through the House and the Senate unanimously. So it can be done. It takes lots and lots of work. I'm telling you, it was not an easy task. But, if you want to get something accomplished, Ronald Reagan said 80% of something is better than a whole lot of nothing. And so what I've always done is try and get as much as I possibly can and move that bar and work with the other side. And by doing that, you lay a path for success out there that once it gets to the Senate, you minimize your problems over there because you have bipartisan support in the House. They'll look at that and say, well, you've got bipartisan support in the House. It must be a pretty good bill. The minority members will look at it and say, it must be a pretty good bill, and we can support it too. And by doing that, you can get across the finish line. And this was whenever Obama was in the White House. So I was able to get the bill through the House, the Senate, and have the president sign it. So I think it can be done. It's a lot of hard work. But that's what is part of this, as you were talking about, the relationship building. And you just have to work with people, earn their trust, and be honest with them. And as you go through the process, it takes time, but it can be done. It's not something that can't be done.
Let me ask you, are there some other Democrats that you can call on? I don't know if I want to call them your friends or not, but do you have some Democrats you can work with?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and I work a lot because I work in financial services with on both sides of the aisle there. Jim Hines from Connecticut, Ed Perlmutter from Colorado, David Scott from Georgia. Quite frankly, the lady that just won for the United States Senate in Arizona, Kirsten Sinema, was very helpful on a lot of bills that I worked on. Carolyn Maloney from New York, she and I have got some bills that we're working on together. I mean, in spite of the fact that Maxine tries to run her side of the aisle with an iron fist, there's a lot of folks over there that are willing to push back against that sort of authoritarian way of working the committee and work with us to get things done, because they have to go home and talk to their constituents and say, hey, I'm accomplishing this, I'm accomplishing that. And, sometimes they've got good ideas, too. I mean, no party has a lock on all the good ideas. Now, you have to be careful. Some of their ideas are a little bit skewed by their ideology, but at the same time, a good idea is a good idea, and so let's make it work. So we formed a lot of good relationships across the aisle, and there's a gentleman from Chicago by the name of Foster. He's a PhD scientist, actually, and he comes up with some good stuff sometimes with regards to some of the financial services issues and capital markets. So, it's just a matter of getting to know the people. And, Denny Heck from Washington is another friend. We've had dinner a time or two and sit down and say, where can we find common ground? And he's been very helpful on a bill or two as well.
All right. What's it going to be like when you go back in January and you are in the minority party? Because that's going to be a change for you.
Yeah, I think, the fact that I'm a senior member on the committee, and the Democrats on the committee, they know me and I know them. And so we'll continue to work. They'll have to take the lead on these issues. I've got a bunch of bills that we're looking at filing and want to continue to work on. And so I will find somebody over there and work with them and hopefully get a lot of what I want. Some of this stuff is not partisan. It's stuff you can be bipartisan on. So it's a matter of getting them to support it. Now, How much Maxine allows to have happen, I'm not sure. We'll see what she wants to do. She's getting herself into a corner hole right now, though, and that's because of all the outlandish statements that she's made and the quotes that she's allowed herself to be quoted in a paper as having said, she's kind of painted her in the corner as being some sort of extremist kook here that is going to take over the committee, and she doesn't like that portrayal of herself. But I mean, that's what she's been doing over the last several weeks here and the last several months. And so she's trying to take that persona of her and sort of be able to move past that. And I think to do that, she's starting to try and find ways to work with us and find areas where we can work together. So to be able to sort of get the perception that she is a competent and efficient and fair-minded chairman, she's going to have to go out and earn that, because she's certainly hurt herself along those lines with all of the statements she's made over the last several months. And because of that, we may be able to find some issues we can actually work with her on. So we're going to see how it plays out. She may just be as adamant as she has been in the last several months and just said, heck with everything, and just double down on continue to go after the president and his tax returns and his family's financial deals and just be, hell-bent on that sort of stuff. But if she actually wants to, change her reputation and the perception she has among most folks in Washington, she's going to have to come to us and work with us a little bit more to change that. So we'll see which way she goes.
I'm guessing you're meeting on the Financial Services Committee?
Yes, on the Financial Services Committee, yeah. She doesn't have as much impact on other committees because those folks all have their own separate chairman. But on Financial Services, she will be the power of the committee because she will be the chairman. And in Congress, when you're chairman of the committee, you only answer to the leadership. And they can sometimes give you direction, but by the same token, the issues that come before your committee, that's all within your purview, and you are the person in charge of all that. So she becomes a very, very, very powerful person because the Financial Services Committee in Washington is one of the four top committees. They call them an A committee, and it's Ways and Means, Energy, Commerce, Appropriations, Financial Services.
Well,
four A committees.
And you and I have been talking for the last year or so about the cybersecurity bill that's out there. Where does that stand now, and what will happen with the new leadership?
Well, again, that's an issue that probably has got some bipartisan support. We'll see. There's a couple things in my bill that they didn't like, so if I bring it up, we may have to water it down a little bit to get it through. But we're going to bring it up and we're going to find out. So again, that plus Bank Secrecy Act, anti-money laundering, is another big issue. And in fact, the Democrats have got Carolyn Maloney has got a bill that I've worked with her on, together with her, that we may be able to work together on that issue as well and get something done, because that's, again, is an issue that's not necessarily a partisan issue.
All right. I'll ask you one more question about the change in leadership, and then we'll move on. How tough will Speaker Pelosi be to work with?
Well, that's a great question. Again, she's in the same position as Maxine Waters, in that she's made a lot of statements out there that are anti-Trump, and really the perception of her as somebody who is, hell-bent in going after the president and his family versus trying to get something accomplished legislatively is there. Does she want to change that perception? Does she want to work with us and try and she's actually trying to tamp down some of this impeachment discussion with Maxine and some of the other members, because she knows that that's really an issue that's going to hurt her from the standpoint of perception of her leadership as well as her party in the elections. Over 70% of the people, regardless of whether you're Democrat or Republican, do not want to impeach any president, period, regardless of whether it's a Republican or Democrat. They do not want to go down that road. Republicans tried it with Clinton, didn't work, and the Democrats are going to try it with Trump, and it's not going to work for them. So we'll see if she wants to, she has the ability to leverage the Democrats in the Senate against the Republicans in the Senate. And then, the president's going to have to figure out how to get in the middle of all this and be able to pull some strings to be able to get certain things done in working with both groups. Because of the makeup now, it puts the Democrats at the table on every single issue. It's very difficult to do anything on a, well, it's going to be impossible now to do anything on a vote of 51 in the Senate. everything else is going to have to take a vote of 60 over there. That means you automatically put Chuck Schumer at the table, and you empower Nancy Pelosi. So this is how important holding the House was to us and to the country. So now a lot of the bills that are going to come out are going to be, some really lousy bills. So we'll see what happens.
Is this where you need that leadership from the president, too, to get everyone to coalesce and work together?
Yeah, you know, and the president's a deal maker. I mean, he's willing to get, normally willing to get in the middle and do something. And I think, to me, it's going to be even more important to have him lead us now because, you know, in order to be able to set both Republicans and the Democrats at the table and get something accomplished, he's going to have to say, this is what I want. You guys put your bickering aside and figure out how to get it done. I think, you know, his leadership is going to be even more important in this next 2 years because the partisanship that's there is going to continue to you know, rear its head, and unless he can tamp it down and keep us focused, we're not going to get anything accomplished. So he has a large agenda, a lot of things he wants to work on. I mean, he wants money for the border wall. He wants, you know, border security in general. He wants to try and get, you know, the GSE reform, but our committee is a big issue. You know, he still wants to do tax reform. You know, we've got a few other things like flood insurance we're going to have to reauthorize. We've still got this budget we've got to figure out. There's just a lot of things on his plate that he wants to try and accomplish besides the transportation infrastructure bill that everybody's talking about that nothing getting done on. So he has a large agenda, and it's going to take, in this situation, bipartisan support now to be able to get things done. And in order to get that done, it's going to take, I think, leadership on his part.
All right. Very few days remain in the what's called the lame duck session. How about the farm bill? We're hearing it can get done. It can't get done. What are you hearing?
Well, I think we get back this next week. I think it probably would have been done this week, but the funeral of President Bush delayed everything. But I think this next week it will get done. And again, this is a situation where the election had consequences. You know, Chairman Conaway from the House was adamant about not getting in on the provision of having people at least 20 hours a week of training in order to qualify for food stamps if they were physically able. The Democrats rejected that in the Senate and forced it to go to the conference committee, and that was the holdup. It's been sitting there for 3 or 4 months now as a result of that. But now, with the new leadership change in January, this bill is probably going to be watered down even further and get even less of what we want and perhaps not help the farmers near as much. So Conaway and our leadership team, I think, have backed off on that provision and are now willing to take the Senate's position on that if they can keep and hold the rest of the bill. And I think the bill's pretty good. It really just tweaks everything in a way that's going to be very helpful to the farmers. But that provision held things up, and now with the change of leadership, I think we're going to back off on that, the House position anyway, and get that thing done so we can protect and keep as much of the rest of the bills we can.
And Senator Grassley still has a pretty big concern about a portion of the bill that was not included to limit farm payments to one, as he said, actively engaged in farming. So he's got some concern about it, but it still sounds like it could be a done deal.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's going to pick a bill apart. I mean, as large as a bill like that is, you can always say, well, you didn't go far enough, or you went too far, you didn't have enough of this, too much of that. The bill, because of its size, its sheer size, is a series of compromises. And, you know, again, as I've said throughout this discussion, you know, in the Senate, it takes 60 votes to get something done, which means the Democrats get to be able to have their say with the bill, because it was only 51 Republicans, and after the election, I think it'll be 53. You know, they still are at the table, and as a result, they're going to get some of the things they want, which are not necessarily what Republicans want. So that's part of the process, is you're going to have to compromise on a few things. And Grassley, while he may not like what's in there on all this, generally it's a good bill for his farmers in Iowa especially. So I think in the day he'll vote for it. But, you know, again, a lot of these guys are the comments that they make. Let's be honest here. You know,
they make good headlines, don't they?
They make great headlines, Bob. You know, you do exactly what I was going to say. It makes great headlines. It's great for posturing and positioning for your folks back home. You know, if you're a senator, this goes statewide across the entire state. I think he's up for re-election in 2020, if I'm not mistaken. So he's already getting ready for the next election. So, that's part of what's going on here. You always have to understand that, especially when a senator gets up, probably 90% of what he's doing is about politics and 10% about policy.
I've never heard that before. I kind of like the way that sounds.
It's amazing. It's amazing. I just, I just roll my eyes and just shake my head sometimes about some of the things that those guys do over there. You know, we in the House, we just work ourselves to the bone and just trying to get things done and get it pushed out the door. And, you know, somebody once said, you get a lot accomplished, you don't care who gets the credit. And that's what we do. We move it out. And then it gets over there, it's just all this posturing and positioning and trying to leverage their vote for something else. It's just, it's maddening. You know, I've actually gone over there a couple of times to talk to some senators because they were holding up some of my bills and said, what are you doing? And the senator was just very honest. He said, well, I'm trying to get a vote on a bill that I want, and I'm using your bill as leverage. I said, why? Well, if this bill is not that important, isn't it? Well, it's important to a few people over here, and I know that, so I can leverage your bill to get a vote on my bill. I said, but Senator, your bill's never going to pass. I know, but I just want to vote on it. So all he did was want to get a vote on a bill that he knew he was going to lose the vote on. So guess why he wanted to vote? I mean, it's pretty obvious. He just wanted to be able to go home, and it was right before an election. Be able to go home and thump his chest about what he was doing. So I asked him, I said, all right, after the election is over now, will you turn my bill loose and let it pass? If you don't get the vote before it, will you forget about it because it's not going to be important to your election after that? And he said, yeah, I'll let it go after the election.
Wow.
And so he did. So he did, to his credit, he did. And, you know, we will pass the bill and get it across the finish line. President signed it. But, you know, that's the kind of games that they play and the stuff that makes it very frustrating for us in the House. Because we just don't do that way. We don't have the membership. Our structure in the House is different, so you can't really hold things up like that. But basically, the only person in the House can hold things up like that is the Speaker. So over there, every single senator can hold something up. So those are the frustrations of my day every day, Bob.
All right, hey, we got a couple minutes left. Let me ask you, Senator Hawley's coming on board after the first of the year. There are going to be a bunch of new members of the U.S. House too. What kind of advice do you give to freshman lawmakers their first trip to Washington?
Well, the first thing I tell them is get good staff because you have to be able to have good people around you to be able to understand the issues and to be able to do the constituent work that it takes to be able to be an effective office. You know, when you call my office or Senator Hawley's office or Senator Blunt's office or, you know, Sam Graves' office, whoever it is, you expect somebody on the other end of the phone to be able to answer your question or if not, be able to get back to you shortly with an answer. You have to have good, competent people around you. And then from that standpoint, to be able to do the service part of your office, the legislative part, again, you have to have good people that understand issues to be able to advise you. You know, we can't be experts on everything, Bob. I mean, I deal in financial services every day, so that doesn't mean I'm an expert on education, transportation, defense issues. You know, we have in our conference, in our delegation, I should say, in our delegation, pretty much here in Missouri, everybody's sort of spread around. Ann and I both on financial services, and you have Sam's. He's going to be the new ranking member on transportation, by the way. If we would have held a majority, he would have been the transportation chairman, but now he's going to be the ranking member. Vicki does a lot of the foreign affairs work. Billy's on energy and commerce, and Jason's on ways and means. And so you've got most of the big important committees that are important to Missouri covered by each one of our members of our delegation. And then, quite frankly, we have a delegation luncheon once a month and include Lacey Clay and Emanuel Cleaver, the two Democrats, and we sit down around the table and we get to know each other better that way. And even the two Democrats, we get along with each other and help each other in issues where we can. We understand we're not going to be on the same page on a lot of issues, but by doing that, we garner support. For instance, a good example would be, for instance, with Emanuel, he's got three rural counties, and he used to be the mayor of Kansas City. He doesn't know much about agriculture and out there, and so when it comes to ag issues, why he's very willing to listen to us to be able to help him with those votes to make sure that we help and protect our agricultural communities. So we work together on issues a lot like that. And I think, to me, when you advise a new person coming in, good staff, both for legislative work and constituent work, that helps you be able to get off and running and get your foot, your feet on the ground, so you can begin to understand the process.
All right. Hey, we got a minute left. Your big priority bill next session, what's it going to be?
Well, probably be three different ones. As I've talked about, the Bank Secrecy Act, anti-money laundering, data security would be the second one. And then there's a I'm going to probably be the ranking member on the same committee I did have, which is financial institutions, which oversees all the banks and credit unions and all those folks, as well as the regulators. And there's a new rule that's coming out. It's called CECL, which is very devastating to most of your community banks with regards to how they book their loans. They're requiring them to put some capital aside for every single loan, even though it's a good loan. And that's going to really hurt small banks to be able to do that. So we're going to try to work on that issue a little bit besides all the other important issues that are important to the district. This past week, we had a big win from the standpoint that in the Coast Guard Reauthorization Act, we reauthorized, we were able to get a waiver for the Delta Queen, which is a riverboat on the Mississippi River that can go up and down on 3-day, 5-day, and 7-day excursions. And it's docked in at a city over on the Mississippi River in my district, and so it was a really big deal to be able to do that. And so once in a while you get some small wins, and that happened to be one of them.